This podcast is brought to you in part by Sovereign Sportsman Solutions. As conservation officers, we know just how important technology is in this day and age. S3 is a cutting-edge and trusted vendor that provides state agencies with licensing, mobile, CRM, marketing, law enforcement, and event management solutions all in one place. They are dedicated to benefiting the resource, so check out the link in the show notes to sign up for their newsletter and get the industry insights, news, and content that can keep you up to date on the tech that helps drive conservation into the future. A Game Warden's children's book, titled A Cowboy in the Woods, is a story of Bobby, a boy who spends the whole summer observing wildlife, writing notes in his notebook, fishing with his dad, and keeping track of all the animals in his neighborhood. While trying to solve a neighborhood mystery, what he discovers is more than just an appreciation for the natural world. The idea for this book came from Wayne Saunders' own childhood experiences, growing up and exploring the woods and streams and lakes and ponds of his native New Hampshire. The love of nature instilled in his childhood led him to a career as a conservation officer. Wayne Saunders is a retired lieutenant conservation officer from the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. Lindsay Webb is a naturalist, wildlife biologist, and environmental educator. Together, they collaborated with wildlife artist Ashley Mayers to produce The Cowboy in the Woods, the story of a boy whose love of nature leads him in unexpected directions. Available at wardenswatch.com and Amazon. Warden's Watch Podcast is now on Patreon, combining the Thin Green Line Podcast and the Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon to bring member-exclusive extra content, both video, audio, and with product deals as well. Become a member to support our podcast and get something extra. Search Warden's Watch Podcast on Patreon.
We love our children. We protect them. We guide them. We prepare them for life in the world. With all that we do, from deep in our hearts, we cannot control all things. Life-threatening illnesses and disabilities affect far too many of our children each year. While we cannot change the circumstance, we can make dreams come true. Dreams to provide hope, to provide spiritual healing and strength, to provide moments of happiness and relief in the hardest of times. We can give a glimmer of light and hope in a time of darkness and despair. Join huntofalifetime.org to help make dreams come true, to provide hope for children with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Hunt of a Lifetime is a nonprofit organization fulfilling dreams for hunting and fishing trips to youth 21 and under with life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. Visit huntofalifetime.org to learn how you can make a difference.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch. Warden's Watch, episode 74, The Ellises. And this is a first for Warden's Watch, John. It's a father and son team of game wardens, which it's so cool when you have a history, but to be on at the same time is pretty epic. We don't hear about that. Do you know of any other cases?
I've never had a situation. We have one of our legendary lieutenants, Kathy Ponting, and my partner for a lot of years on some projects. Her daughter is now a game warden and in cannabis enforcement and a canine handler, but they didn't serve at the same time. And I've known of some others on the West Coast and up in the Northwest, but never that have served during the same career period. So this is a great story. And how cool would it be to be able to, you know, sounding more things off your dad, you know, your mentor that probably brought you into it. And now you're that younger game warden and you know, he's a little more seasoned, whether he's a commander level or, you know, he's still in the field, you know, at the line staff level, being a district warden. This is a unique situation, and these stories were fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, he doesn't start off wanting to be a game warden, actually he kind of tries to avoid it, but I think your inner self comes back to you of what you really want to do, and that's a story that comes out. And they say that, I guess, in South Carolina, there is actually another father and son duo that are serving now at the same time, which, again, you know, to find one. Now there's two in South Carolina. That's it's just a really interesting interview. Episode 74, Warden's Watch. Remember, that Apple Podcast 5-star rating. We have a 4.9. You could put us back to the 5. So if you want to reach out there and do something for us, I really appreciate you guys, and I know John does, giving us a good rating. If you think it's a good show, and that's sharing it with other people. Share it with people of like minds that you know will like this podcast. Hey, in this episode of Warden's Watch, I have the privilege of hanging out with the Ellis's father and son team from South Carolina. So that's great. Lee and Hunter Ellis, which I met Lee long before. This is my first time meeting Hunter, actually, and we've been to several international wildlife.
We've been going to these conferences together now.
Yeah. I met the rest of the family, but you're the last one to be met.
Someone had to stay back and take care of the animals.
That's right. And the reason this is cool is because they're both game wardens, a father and son duo, which is kind of unique. Maybe, you know, wardens fall in the legacy, but usually not in the same time frame. Trying to think of other, and you guys have another group in South Carolina that does the same thing.
Yep. We've got another captain. I'm a captain in admin. He's a captain over a field region. His son actually works the county I live in, and Hunter works the adjacent county, so they've kind of ran together, and it's believe it or not, it's not that unusual for South Carolina. We've had, I think we're the fourth or fifth father-son game warden team that was served actively at the same time, so it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I think we're the best-looking, in my opinion.
Definitely the best-looking.
So. I'm not there to judge, man. I'm not there to judge. But I think it's cool because I know my son's not going to follow in my footsteps, but...
Well, I said that too, Wayne.
You did.
I did. He did.
We went every direction there was, physical therapist, all the stuff he was in school for, teaching, and he called me one day and he goes, look, I've always wanted to be a game warden and I'm going to be a game warden. So, you know, what do you do then? So I said, well, come on, this is what you need to do.
It's kind of one of those things, you know, it was a realization. You know, I went into physical therapy, thought it was cool, got into it, and I was like, being a game warden is what I really want to do.
How far into it did you get before it changed?
I think, what?
2 years.
2 years?
Well, let's bring it up to speed. So 2 years, he's in a physical therapy degree.
Yeah.
Then he calls me, says, Dad,
oh, no.
You know, I love history, so I think I'm going to do education and become a history teacher and maybe coach ball. I said, okay. So did that for about a year. And then we had openings coming up, and he was just turning 21, and he was eligible. And he's like, hey, I've always wanted to be a game warden. I've told you that. And if I change my major to this, I can graduate in December and y'all are hiring in February. So he did that and went through the process and actually worked for the college for a while as an admissions officer and got hired on the next go round. And about 3.5 years in, 2.5 years
coming
in
up to a 3 year, my third year now. So, I mean,
but honestly, you ended up getting a degree.
Yeah, so have a degree. I actually have a history degree, kind of specialized mostly in South Carolina history, but I do pretty much all of it. But also started taking some education classes. So technically I could go teach high school history, but I was like, game warden's more my route. That's what I want to do. So I do have a degree. That is one thing. He said you better get a degree no matter what you do.
Well, you went through that process, so just tell me how that went with you, because that's just Yeah, and physical therapist, history teacher, yeah.
So growing up, you know, I played baseball and all, I played sports, and about my junior year of high school, I was a pitcher.
Yeah.
And I tore up my arm, had to get Tommy John surgery where they take a tendon out of your leg, put it in your arm, and basically I had to do 6 months of rehab. And working with the physical therapist, I loved it. Fell in love with it, you know, you still got to work one-on-one with people.
What was her name?
I don't remember.
We're actually a guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, man. There were some days I really didn't want to go because I was like, I know he's going to beat me up.
That's the only woman that's ever made me cry is my physical therapist. Mm-hmm. It's called about breaking scar tissue down, she was calling it. Yeah. And
Oh, man, my eyes would water, and I'm like, man.
Yeah, he'd go to drop me off. He'd be like, you ready? I'm like, nah, can I go home with you? No, you need to get out there. So I went through that, fell in love with it. I said, you know what? They make good money.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. But in the back of my head, I'm like, you know, growing up, being a game warden's kid, everyone said they wanted to be the game warden.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the job, you get the cool truck, you get the boat, you do all that. And, you know, everyone else did their own thing. For me, I was like, I really don't want to do that, but I want to see what else is going on. But for some reason, I kept coming back. I don't know if it's in my blood or what, but I went through the physical therapist, got into it. I was like, I don't really like this. You know, let's try something different. Biology's hard. I'm going to be the first one to tell you, biology gets hard as you get into college. So I started doing a little bit of the schooling, stuff like that, teaching. I did some clinicals, taught in some of the high schools here in the upstate. I went to Landry University in Greenwood, South Carolina. So I'm originally from the coast, and I fell in love with it. But, you know, seeing that green uniform, I don't know what it's about it. Something about being green jeans just said I need to go do it.
Yeah, and you saw it all the way growing up, so it kind of flowed into it. You knew exactly what you were getting into, and you knew what he was exactly getting into.
Well, and I warned him. I said, you know, because at the time I was the captain over the training section. So when they get hired, they're under training for about 6 months. And it was like, you know, you're going to take a tail whipping over this because, you know, captain above you's dad. And I said, you know, I'm not dad at work. But I'll say this, probably one of the biggest privileges I've had being a game warden was pinning that badge on his chest in the same room that I got pinned 20 years prior. So it was just it was a weird situation,
but
it was an honor to do it, and not many people can say that. And I had the opportunity and the honor every now and then to go get in a boat with him on a holiday weekend or go out on a patrol with him. And there's not a lot of dads that can say, "Hey, I work with my kid doing something we both love." So you know, a lot of people will say, "Oh, you know, it's hard to become one," and I tell them, just persevere. You know, I mean, I went through our hiring process for 9.5 years. Interviewing with the colonel, getting to the last groups, and I said, you know, just hang in there. And I tell them that every one of them that come, you know, gets a little disheartened.
You were in the process for nine. You weren't trying to get hired for 9.5 years.
9.5 years. I was
really
working as a local police officer.
Wow.
At the time, our turnover rate is still so small, even currently.
How long did it take you, Hunter?
Took me 2 years to get on, even with, you know, even with granted being on. But, when I went through my interview, they said, "Hey, your dad did 9. Are you willing to do 10? I said, "I'll do 11 if we need to."
Wow.
I said, "I prefer not to." But
that, you know, that's some tenacity.
We were only hiring two, sometimes three officers a year. Mm-hmm. So, and we do statewide hiring. So it used to be at one time there had to be an opening in the county that you lived in when I first started in this process of trying to get on with DNR. And so if there was no opening in the county you resided in, you couldn't even test or do anything.
Oh, my goodness. That limits it, doesn't it?
So then it went to statewide hiring. So then you'd have, like, I think the first year I went through the process, there was 4 positions statewide, and there was probably 4,300 people who went through this process. And it was just like, I had almost given up. And I got the call, and they're like, "Hey, you know, we're going to offer you a position." Background investigator showed up and went through everything, and it was one of those few times at that time that, you know, you kind of tear up when you get that letter because it's just been a dream. You know, when I was a senior in high school, and then we produce a magazine called South Carolina Wildlife Magazine, and it was the 75th anniversary of our wildlife law enforcement division, and it had a whole magazine of just stories. And I'll say it now, and it's terrible, but I was sitting in the high school library reading this thing, and I got so intrigued and deep in it. I've hunted and fished all my life, so I knew who the game warden was. I've had dealings with him. Never got a ticket.
That we know of.
That I'll admit to.
Never got caught.
Yeah. Never got caught.
Best game warden, best outlaw.
But I was so caught up in it, the bell rang, it's time to go to another class. So I just kind of tucked the magazine in my back pocket and stole it from the library and finished reading it. And I told my dad, then it was like, I think it was 88 or 87. I said, "I'm going to be a game warden." And he's like, of course, he hunted and fished his whole life down in Florida, here in South Carolina. And he's like, "You're never going to be a game warden," because it was just, I mean, you had to know the right people. All the stars had to align. And the year I got hired, we did the largest hire class we've ever done. There was 38 officers hired.
Oh, my goodness.
They had just passed a new boating safety bill that funded like 30 officers, and I got picked up in that group.
Nice.
I worked coastal marine enforcement. At that time, we had 9 districts, 8 of those were upland game and fish districts, and District 9 was Marine Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
So we dealt with, you know, recreational, commercial fisheries, boating enforcement, and a little bit of waterfowl, not a whole lot, about 2 years of that. And then we merged down to 4 regions, and then you pretty much did it all. That was our saying on the coast, is we do it all. So we were doing recreational enforcement, commercial enforcement. All the hunting fell into our lap then. So it's been a fun ride, I can tell you that.
Lee, can you just like kind of talk about South Carolina and then South Carolina game wardens? And then I'll give you your question, Hunter, so you can think about this. I want some history because you're the history teacher. So maybe we can get a little South Carolina game warden type history in here. But just tell us how South Carolina is kind of framed up, your responsibilities, whether they're a little different than another state. Or I know Hunter's told me some stories that were similar to our stories, and then we didn't have motor vehicle authority. When I started in New Hampshire, when I ended New Hampshire, we had motor vehicle authority. Probably due to some of the situations Hunter's, you know, talked to me today about. So, and we'll probably get into some of these stories because my listeners love stories. Oh, yeah. They just love game world stories. Well,
I'll steal some of Hunter's thunder because some of this he doesn't know and I do on the history side.
So. He knows a little bit more than I do.
Does he? I figured the history teacher would know the history.
Yeah. Well, he's my history, you know, teacher.
Boy.
Yeah, I'm talking about history, so it's just, but I got a business degree.
Okay.
You see where I rubbed off.
We started out as the South Carolina Wildlife Department. The chief game warden was named, I think it was 1905, and he was the wildlife department. And over the years, it was Chief A.A. Richardson, and over the years, he said, you know, we need some science to go behind these laws. And at that time, they got a percentage of their license sales. So you actually bought your hunting license from the game warden. And they also got a percentage of the tickets they wrote, which is probably not looked too favorably now, don't do that. But long story short, he felt like we needed some science to go behind the enforcement actions we were doing. So he hired the first biologist, James Webb. And then that kind of rolled, and as they slowly, they took over like the oyster enforcement for coastal fisheries, and we turned into the South Carolina Wildlife and Marine Resources Department. And in 1994, they did a big restructure in South Carolina. They moved it to the Department of Natural Resources, and they took Wildlife and Marine Resources and some other different smaller agencies and combined into one. And we've been that since 94. But we do it all. We're a Class 1 state officer. We go through, in South Carolina, we're one of, I think, 2 states that have a singular police academy. Mm-hmm. So every officer in the state of South Carolina, from the one-man department to the 900 troopers we have, go through the South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy, the same academy.
And we do in New Hampshire, too, which I think adds a lot of brotherhood, a lot of networking early on. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps tremendously when you know sheriffs, local police, state police, highway patrol, all wrapped into that one academy because you bond as brothers and you don't think of as another entity. You think of all as one unit, which I think lends
and as you know, being a game warden, you know, a lot of times your backup is your local police officer or your sheriff's deputy or your state troopers on patrol, because we've got counties that have 8 officers in them. But we also have counties that have 2, you know, and we're their backup a lot of times. The smaller agencies, they're calling our dispatch to send our officers to back them up on domestics and whatever they need. We do it all. We actually have full state authority. We've got 2 federal commissions. So I laugh at people. I said, we can lock you up for not having a fishing license or we can lock you up for murder. You know, it just depends what we run across. Of course, that's not our primary mission. And we kind of try to stay to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great job. It's a unique job. You know, a lot of people say, well, you got the greatest authority of anybody. And we do have a lot of different, you know, you throw in the federal commissioning because we've got 225 miles of coastline. We go out to over 3 miles of state water, and then it goes out to another 225 miles of federal jurisdiction. So it's, you know, from the mountains to the sea here, we're foothills of the Appalachians. So you'll see guys that get hired and they're starting out in saltwater, and several years later they're working trout streams in the upstate in the mountains. So it's a unique environment to work in.
I will say you made a good point when I was early on getting hired. You said the game warden is Swiss Army knife of law enforcement, and it's a true statement.
It is.
As I've gotten into the field, you know, the sheriff's department call us because we got the specialized training. You know, we have the equipment that's needed, and we kind of think outside the box. I mean, you know that being a game warden, you don't – we're law enforcement, but we do it in a different way. It's our own way. So I always kind of taken that to heart. And like you said, being in the academy, that camaraderie.
Yeah.
in our academy, game wardens, we all go in as one class. So we're not spread out. They do a different, what is it, one class every two weeks?
Yeah, the way the academy's set up now, so they start a new class of law enforcement officers every 2 weeks, about 70 officers in a class. So
wow.
When we hired, you know, I think his class was 18 or 20.
Yeah, about 20.
We sent them all at that time at one time. So you'd have a whole class of game wardens.
So 1/3 of the class is game wardens.
That has since changed. They went to a new process now. So we actually teach a 13-week wildlife basic training academy. And once they complete that, then they start the police academy for the state academy certification after that. So it's a pretty long training process for us. You know, they go for 12 weeks to the police academy and then 13 weeks with us.
Wow.
Then they start FTO training. And unlike your traditional law enforcement, you know, and you know this, I'm preaching to the choir here.
You're preach to the listeners.
That's what we're you know, you don't get to see that same shoplifter every week, and then you're good at dealing with shoplifters or domestics or whatever. You know, you have an opening season. Deer season opens, and it runs whatever the length it is, and here we go August 15th to January 1.
That's a good
stretch. Once that's open and closed, you've only completed one season, but then we have doves come in, so you've got to be trained on that. Waterfowl, turkey, you know, alligator season, shrimp baiting season, you know, fishing season in South Carolina is year-round.
Shrimp baiting, season, huh?
Yep. It's
that's you got somewhere. Commercial and recreation, so.
We're going to have to talk about shrimp baiting because I'm telling you, I don't know nothing about shrimp baiting.
It's a unique way that we do it down here. In North Carolina, they use shrimp traps. So it looks like a crab trap, but they use it to catch shrimp in. Down here, we take fish meal and mix it with clay and turn it into big bait balls. And you get a recreational shrimp baiting license. Can't do that commercially. We have shrimp trawling and other things. And they license you for 10 poles. And they take 10 PVC pipe poles, and they go out about 100 yards. They space them out. And they make big old balls about the size of a small watermelon, and they drop them by each pole. Well, that clay binds with that fish meal, and as it slowly breaks up, all the shrimp come in to eat the fish meal, and they cast net over the top of it.
Okay.
So you're allowed to catch 48 quarts of shrimp a day with heads on during that 60-day season.
Wow.
So it's a... it's a pretty hefty fine during that time, though. You know, as in South Carolina, all your seafood product has to go through a licensed wholesale dealer. So
even when they're fishing recreationally?
Well, no. So that's a recreational only season. Okay. But you know, you can catch 48 quarts of shrimp every day. You know, you get the little signs put up in the break room at work or in the lunchroom, and you know, if you want shrimp, call Jimmy. And if we catch you selling those shrimp that were caught recreationally over bait, it's $10,000 fine.
We seize all the shrimp.
And we seize everything, boat, truck, whatever's involved with that.
And that happens quite a bit, doesn't it?
Not as much as it used to, because it used to be like $500.
Okay, so that was worth the squeeze
on that one.
When it hit 10,000, that hurt, huh?
Yeah.
A couple of those, and people were like, yeah, don't do that anymore. I lost my car, my truck, my house.
Exactly.
Usually going home to the wife with a $10,000 ticket isn't nice.
No. I've written a lot less, and wives haven't been happy. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. But it's, you know, we've got a long history here, of course, being one of the first 13 colonies and starting early on in law enforcement for wildlife enforcement, which they were Audubon officers back then. So it's a good tradition. You know, law enforcement as a whole is a tradition.
Audubon officers?
Yeah. Believe it or not, that's what some of the first game wardens in South Carolina were commissioned by the Audubon Society.
So really?
The original ones were Audubon officers. They were paid by the Audubon Society.
Huh.
So that's when they established the South Carolina Wildlife Department. They became true game wardens in 1905.
So as an Audubon officer, did they tell them not to shoot any bird or just only shoot so many songbirds? Or
I think it was – I don't know the complete history there, but it had a lot to do with waterfowl and the plumage sale, you know, that commercialization back then.
That's interestingly, because that's the first time I've ever heard of an Audubon officer.
Yeah.
So that's pretty unique. I'm going to have to do a little more research and dig it into that. Because every time I think of Audubon, like a lot of people, it's just bird watching.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And bird protection, I'm sure, rolls in there at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But,
you know, and here we are in 2021, and we're talking about used traditionally hunting and fishing and angling and, you know, trappers and whatnot. And now in 2021, we're trying to work with our non-consumptive user groups, you know, naturist, hikers,
Audubon,
mountain bike, Audubon folks.
Yeah.
Because it's all about preserving nature. Mm-hmm. It's all about preserving that natural resource, whether you are a consumer of it where you're hunting and fishing, or whether you're just a non-consumptive user where you like to watch birds. You know, we're all in it for the goal of protecting that resource. So. Mm-hmm.
And maybe educating some of those that don't understand hunting and why that type of thing. Because those that like to see nature, like we all do, sometimes don't understand the management there it. So if we can make those bridges, I think that's vital to everything.
I think nowadays it's a little more educating because, you know, I grew up as a game-born son, but a lot of kids and, you know, young adults my age, they didn't really grow up hunting and fishing like I had the advantage to. And I'm running into people my age that are having kids. They want to get them into hunting and fishing. They've never done it. So we get the opportunity to teach them that. So I think maybe not as much as, I don't know, back when you were in the field educating as we are now, as enforcement as well. So it kind of goes hand in hand, I think.
You know, our programs have developed from hunter education to take one, make one, you know, where folks come in and say, hey, you know, my child was interested in getting into fishing or hunting, and we're doing the fishing rodeos where we're giving the tackle to them, we're giving them the fishing rods, we're stocking ponds for them. The take one, make one hunts that we take them on, you know, they're mentored by a game warden while they get into the hunting act. Then they can move on to having a volunteer mentor take them for a year of introducing them to different species and different seasons. So it's truly is a lot of education, and even our enforcement's education. You know, for the most part, we're enforcing recreation for the most part.
Right.
You know, there's definitely commercialization and the bad guy poacher.
Right.
But, you know, I'd say 80 to 90% of our true contacts are recreational settings.
Right.
So, you know, we have a different attitude when we do that type of enforcement. So we're a little easier to deal with, in my opinion. We treat people in a different manner. But, you know, I look at it this way. When I give them the ticket or a warning or just a verbal, I'm educating them through this whole thing.
Absolutely.
It's not just about writing the ticket and getting a fine or getting jail time or whatever the case may be, or suspending a privilege. They're learning. And the bad guy who's doing it purposely, that's when you're doing the enforcement.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't agree with you more. And that education is so vital. And the take one, make one, that's interesting. So the first contact they have with the take one, make one is with the game warden?
Yep. Whether it's a parent or someone, they sign up to become part of that program.
Yeah.
We do hunts. We do, like I say, fishing, small game hunts, big game hunts, turkey hunts.
Wow.
I used to volunteer when I was a field officer, and they'd bring these kids in from you know, military magnet type schools or whatever. And, you know, you take a kid and get in the deer stand, and, you know, we've got guns that have been donated, and you sit with them in that deer stand and teach them about, you know, I had one, the first one I ever did, young lady was sitting in a stand, and she's like, so when did they release the deer? And I'm like, what? And she's like, when did the deer come out? When did they release the deer? And I said, there's nobody releasing deer out here. I said, you know, you got to be quiet and let's watch. You know, we got to, you know, and down here we can bait. So we had bait piles set up and it's like, you know, but she literally thought that you unlocked the gate and here come the deer. So,
Yeah, I think that's great, having that first contact with a game warden. A, you break down that, you know, that police, when they see that police thing, that barrier that automatically builds between, no matter who it is, whether it's fear or whatever, by breaking it with a good, you know, hello, how you doing? You know, it's a nice contact, and now you're teaching those at a young age. I think that's pretty stellar in a day and age where we can't really get to all our hunter safety courses anymore, and they're watching a video of a game warden rather than having that contact, because that contact is priceless for information, for education.
I actually got a cool little story about that, you know, and it comes back to educating in YouTube. I actually had so I get a call from my dispatch so I work in Berkeley County, South Carolina. We get a call from the Sheriff's Department. Hey.
You got to tell us where that is, by
so
the way.
So Berkeley County, South Carolina is right there on the coast, just above Charleston. So Charleston's a big hub for us. I'm right there on the coast, but I don't touch the coast, if that makes sense. So I work a little bit of saltwater, a little bit of freshwater, but I got a lot of private and public land. So I actually have the Francis Marion National Forest. This is actually where this occurred at. And I had a gentleman call me. He said, hey, there's been a car sitting at this road all day. And it's deer season and all, and it's a Sunday. Well, we don't allow Sunday hunting in the National Forest on WMAs. So I said, okay, we'll come take a look at it. So we get there. We're checking it out. We run the tag, different stuff like that. Well, they come from out of town. They're not from around here. kind of a car you wouldn't normally see out there. You know, you used to pick up trucks. This is a car.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of out of, it's not the same. So we're kind of checking it out. I'm sitting there and I start hearing gunshots way off in the distance. So I'm like, okay. So I call some extra officers to come and we start looking and, well, we finally get in contact with the one who owns the car. Well, it's the gentleman's grandmother. So she's like, well, I don't know where he's at. He's been watching YouTube. They wanted to go learn how to hunt. I'm like, has he ever been out here? She's like, no. I'm like, can we get in contact with him? He had his phone off. So we're at this point, we don't know where he's at. We don't know what supplies he has. It's starting to get dark. He's been watching YouTube, trying to learn how to hunt. He wanted to go learn how to hunt. So luckily, we're able to get contact with him. We brought some canines. We're able to track, and we found him in the middle of a swamp. They said, thank y'all for finding us. We started shooting the guns to try to help. Hopefully someone could find us.
Oh, man.
And rather than, you know, taking this opportunity to write loads of citations, hunting out of season, you know, hunting on a WMA, we saw this as an opportunity to educate. I mean, these are three young guys. They'd never been hunting a day in their life. We could have, you know, hit them with every fine and made it to where they would never want to hunt or fish again. And I saw it as an opportunity to educate more than anything because something bad could have happened. You know, mm-hmm. They have more beef jerky than they had water, put it that way. He said, well, this guy said to take beef jerky. I was like, well, do you got any water? Well, I got one bottle of water. Yeah. I said, how long did you plan on staying out here? 3 days? I was like, that wouldn't have worked, man. But luckily, it turned out okay, but, you know, it goes back to educating. You know, education is a big key to what we do, and I saw it as a great opportunity to teach someone about something that I grew up and am passionate about. You know, I get to do it every day. Now you get to teach it. So it's just one of those things, you know, education needs to be there. And if they're trying to get it through other means and it's not the correct way, learning good hunter safety, being prepared, stuff like that, something bad can really happen.
And there's so much of that going on right now, Hunter, is people want to know so much about hunting. And, you know, I think the pandemic put everybody into survival type mode. And, you know, hey, if I don't know how to feed myself, if it hits the fan, what am I going to do?
Oh, yeah.
Which I guess is a good thing for us. I mean, you guys have seen license sales increase, correct?
We did. During the pandemic, we saw boat sales increase. We saw a lot more people out. Of course, there was nothing else to do but get outdoors because you had to be, you know, social distance. We saw our boat sales increase. We saw license sales increase.
They had hunting licenses, right, Hunter?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, he
had that far down.
He had his license and everything like that.
YouTube told him he needed a license.
That's
tell him, hey, you've got to have a little water with you and don't go for 3 days your first time. But
he saw beef jerky hunting license, and I'm good to go. So that's all he saw.
Are you guys doing anything to mentor that type of person that's searching for that information?
We do a lot of, you know, of course, everybody does online stuff now.
Yeah.
But we still have our in-person hunter education courses that we offer on Saturdays.
Nothing beats that in person. Nothing.
We've got a good system in South Carolina. They can take hunter and boater education in their school as part of their PE, their physical education. It may not be a game warden teaching it. It may be a physical education teacher teaching it, but they're a volunteer instructor that we train in teaching that. So, you know, I think the internet's great. You know, everybody loves technology. But I definitely agree with you, Wayne, that that one-on-one conversation, because you can't talk to the video.
Right.
You can't question that video where you can have that instructor up there who can answer some of those questions. And maybe somebody would have said, hey, big guy, one bottle of water is not going to get work for you for 3 days. You
right.
know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's a, you know, we can't rely on just that technological side of it. We've got to go back to the in-person human being sitting there answering questions, telling stories.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's how I learned about hunting. My grandparents, my uncles, my dad, my dad's friends, the older gentlemen that, you know, we hunted with on our hunting camps and our hunting clubs, telling the stories, you know, that's history.
Yeah. You must have a game warden story for us, Lee, because Hunter's got one now. So
it's your turn, man.
It's your turn for sure.
I will, and mine's not an educational story. I'll throw this one out there. Because, you know, it is a very unique, what I always tell everybody, is a non-traditional law enforcement role. The hard part with this job is it's so darn much fun. You don't want to go home. You know, so you'll work 20 hours out of 24 and be right back up to do it again. But, you know, that day I went from, you know, we were patrolling the National Forest because I used to work Berkeley County as an officer in the field.
So you have your dad's old patrol?
He actually has. Believe this is a fun, here's an even better game warden story.
Better game warden story.
So in 2001, I got a boat brand new first new boat I ever got. He comes on, goes to my old county. He now has that boat issued to him.
Oh, my goodness.
Same exact
still
one.
In use. Got a new motor on it, but the same hull, same still in use. And I'm like, he's like, I want a new boat. I'm like, you be quiet. You, that's the greatest
that's
boat.
That's a good
ever,
boat.
That's well, the best boat out there. That was
the reason
a great
I
boat.
Say that, you know, as a kid, you made me wash that boat way too much. So I've had, you know.
A new boat, you got to wash.
But, you know,
on, getting back to my story on it. Is, so, you know, we worked deer hunting in the National Forest. Nuisance animal call. We crawl under a house and get a raccoon out. You know, get a call, go work. I think we went to lunch or went to dinner at that point. Went up to a sanctuary area, hid in the bushes, glassing these guys that are fishing over the sanctuary line. End up arresting four or five people for that. Actually had to put cuffs on these, not just a citation, because they were so, egregiously in violation. Transport them to the jail, finally clear the jail at like 2-3 in the morning. We go home, you know, we stop off at the Huddle House, which is similar to a Waffle House. I don't know if they have them in New Hampshire.
No, we don't have that. We don't have Waffle Houses, so.
What? Oh, no Waffle Houses?
No Waffle Houses, no.
So we grab a little quick breakfast, go home, take a shower, and we're back at the bond hearing, you know, the next, you know, within hours. So it's just like it was the roller coaster of what are you doing today, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know, working fishermen at night, making arrests for illegal fishing over the sanctuary line, taking over the limit of stripers. You know, it was just, if you looked at somebody and said, yeah, I worked like 27 hours, you know, in the last 2 days, you know, nonstop. And they'd be like, what? You're crazy. And it's like, but you didn't feel like you worked 27 hours. You were having a blast. Because there's, I worked for a large local PD, North Charleston Police Department. I left there to become a game warden. And people are like, so you left this big, you know.
Right, took a pay cut.
Oh, definitely took the pay cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said, you get the same thrill from working traffic and working drug dealers as watching somebody gigging flounder or catching over the limit of fish. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, you're hiding in the bushes, you're glassing them with the binoculars, and that heart's beating just as hard as it was when you were working a high profile case at a large traditional law enforcement agency. So, but it's, you know, it's, I still encourage the kids today. They're like, what do you do? You know, famous line here is, what are you, a park ranger? Oh no! Let me explain to you the difference, young man or young lady. You know, but it's a But the best thing is, you know, I call them kids. They went to school with Hunter. They went to school with my two kids, my girls. Is one of them calling me and going, "Hey, Mr. Lee, I think I want to be a game warden. Can you talk to me about it?" Mm. And spending the time to explain to them what we do.
Yes,
that it's a. And I tell them up front. I said, "This is a lifestyle.
Mm.
This is not a job." And, you know, he grew up with that lifestyle of, I'm going to be at your birthday party, but I might have a badge and a gun on.
Yeah.
You know, I may have to get up in the middle of dinner because a CI called me and I've got to go right now to catch the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait till I'm finished eating. So I tell him, I said, you got to understand, this is a lifestyle you're getting into. It is not a job, which I think is difficult in today's times because.
So much.
You know, conferences like this. You know, you start talking, we all have the same stories, different name, same story. We're all facing that same thing. Traditional law enforcement is facing that problem of getting recruitment and retention. So I tell them, I said, this is not, you don't have a shift here. You don't come to work at 7 and get off at 5 or come in at 8 and get off at 4. You know, you're going to work the best 8 out of 24 or maybe the best 16 out of 24, depending on what's going on.
Right.
So, you know, the ones that get it. Truly get it, and they're the ones we're looking to hire and we're trying to bring into the job to keep some of that tradition because you've got to have that type of attitude.
Well, I think a lot has changed, and growing up in it, I have a different view of it.
I'm sure
it becomes
do.
Your identity. You know, I was always known as the game warden's kid, the game warden's son, and I was proud of that. I loved the fact when he would drop me off at school, big old truck, you know, he'd get out in his green uniform. I was proud of that, and that becomes a part of your family's identity. You're getting these. You know, adults and everyone my age, of course, you call us kids. I know. But we're coming into this, and a lot of people don't understand that this becomes a part of you and your family because your family is going to have to give some sacrifices, but it is what you make it. He showed me, you know, he was at every ball game, every practice. If, hey, I got to come later, I got to cut out early, you know, I got to call it, I understood. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But on the family aspect, this is kind of my view. having that support at home, and you might be able to attest to this, really helps you be the best game ward you can be. And that's what my sisters, my mom, we all try to do for you. And I'm now married, almost a year getting there, and I'm blessed in that she has the support of my family, my mother, and him. So when I have to go do that, hey, it's okay. He's going to come back. But he also showed me how to be also a part of the family, but allow this to be a lifestyle.
I hollered at him and ingrained it in him. Call her. Let her know. You get caught up in the job. You get caught up in the fun part of the job or catching the bad guy, and you forget to – hey, send that text and tell her you're
and
okay.
And Lee, he can. We couldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I was about to say, I have the baby.
He has a cell phone.
Yeah.
We would be calling dispatch, hey, can you give my A unit a call and let her know I'm going to be running.
Know, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they laugh, but I was like, I remember when we got issued a text pager.
Uh-huh.
So they'd send you a message from dispatch. You couldn't reply. They just sent you, and then you'd have to go look for a payphone, which most of them have no idea.
No idea.
I saw one the other day.
And pull out a calling card and punch in a 47-digit PIN to make a phone call to find out what was going on. You know, but it is. It's a
We went through this whole process. You can appreciate what we blazed. Our first cell phone was the size of a lunchbox with a phone attached to it that you'd put it on the top of the truck to get a phone call when you needed it there. So you guys just pull out your smartphone. And like cameras, taking pictures of things, you know. No one ever wanted to develop film because it cost money.
Hey, that's enough. You took two pictures of that fatality. That's plenty.
That's right.
You know? Now save those other 14 shots on that roll for the next problem.
Now it's like, hey, you took 30. We need 30 more.
Yes. And then you can pick and choose what you want. So or attach them to a digital file, and they're all there.
Yeah.
No, the world has changed in a lot of ways better. But you're absolutely right. It's changing. The job's changing, and I hope it doesn't. I'd like to fight it all the way because I don't think it can. I think what's going to happen is people don't accept it as a lifestyle are going to end up getting out of it because you spend your career fighting against it because it's so much that, you know, you get that tip at home. Like you said, you got to go. You just got to go. That's in your blood.
If you don't go, you're not going to – I explain it to them like this. We have to be right every time. Mm-hmm. They only gonna be right, you know, once.
Mm-hmm.
They know when they're gonna go out and break the law. We gotta be guessing correctly and be there at that specific time. So we gotta be right every time.
Right.
They don't have to be right every time. We're working on their schedule, and we don't know what the schedule is. So,
it's that cat and mouse game. You do it one time, you just want to keep on doing it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, I tell him, I say, you're either going to be the hero or the zero.
Yeah.
and he'll get frustrated sitting on bait somewhere, and he's like, man, I've been on this bait for 3 weeks. Hey, you're going to be the hero or the zero, man.
Yeah.
You know, you ride it out, make the case, or call it quits and go do something else. Go be a ramp ranger and check boats coming in, you know. And I'm gonna stick it out. I'm like, well, that's what you got to do.
Well, you got me through one. You know, I was sitting on some turkey bait. I was in week 2, day 3 at this point. I'm going, hey, man, he's never going to show up. You know, the season's about to end in 2 days. He's like, man, just stick it out. It's going to be all right. Sure enough, last day, he comes rolling in, two of his buddies. I'm like, and if I would have said, man, he's never going to come. This is a waste. It's a bust. It's a waiting game. But when it – you know, went off. Oh, it was a home run. You know, I was happy. And then he comes back with it. Hey, by the way, you were about to leave, weren't you? Yeah. And I was like, all right, old school knows some stuff.
Yeah, and it gives you a little ammo for the next time you want to leave because remember what happened? When I wanted to leave, I made that big case.
Oh, yeah. You're sitting there, it's cold or you're hot, and you're like, oh, man, you know, Huddle House sounds great right now.
Yeah. But how good a case is it when you step out of the woods after they violate and you're there?
Oh, yeah.
You're there.
It's nothing better than sitting behind a tree and, you know, the guy's going to set up right there and you're waiting. Let them get situated and go, hey, man. It scares them. Yeah. They don't know what to do.
Yeah, no doubt. And that was always my favorite part is getting close to people.
Oh, yeah.
I've had them almost jump out of boats, you know. There's one guy, I'm kayaking beside him as he's trolling. And I'm getting tired, and so I'm finally like, "Hey, are you gonna hold up so I can check you?" He was about jumped out of the boat, you know.
What was that one story?
It's the greatest game of cat and mouse you'll ever play. You know, hey, you tag, you're it.
Absolutely.
You told me a story in Ori where they say, man, where's that Lee at? I know he's you got to say that story.
We had a flounder gigging is a big deal down here. So they put lights on their boat and they get a gig and they stick the fish as they're laying on the bottom.
So they can see the fish lying on the bottom. Okay.
They got these really bright lights. It's almost like the bow fishermen are using now.
Yeah, okay.
And they get a gig and they go along and you can see the outline of the flounder and then they'll stick the fish. And the only way to catch them is to be laying up in the bushes, you know. And I'm laying there and I was new to the area. I was a new game warden up there and some of the guys had quit kind of doing what I was doing because they'd been there forever. And, you know, I was hiding in the bushes and laying on the bank and crawling through these bushes, following them, listening to them talk, you know, and I'm counting, you know, how many they're sticking because they're going to be over that limit or they're undersized. And I could hear them talking about me the whole time. And I mean, and they weren't fans.
No.
They were not fans. And so I follow them all around this point and they come back to the boat land and I let them load the boat up and I step out of the bushes and scared a fool out of them. About like you say, you know, they about jump out their skin and then immediately, you know, where's that F and Ellis at? Is he working tonight? And I'm writing them their tickets. And as I hand it to him, explain, I say, hey, by the way, look on the bottom of your ticket. And it's got my name on it, you know, where you sign the officer's portion. And they're like, the heads just drop. Or my favorite was always, you know, Lee Ellis, he's a good friend of mine. Okay. You know, same thing. It's like, you know, you're like, well, this big old nameplate didn't give it away.
Yeah.
Maybe the bottom of that ticket will, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I still get mistaken for you in Berkeley South. They go, you Lee? I said, I'm a lot younger than him. I could be.
But, you know, it's like they say, you know, and I'll give my Texas brethren the credit, you know. They in Lone Star Law, they talk about, you know, hey, everybody knows who your high school football coach and who your Texas game warden is. That's like that in any state.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's, you know, like I say, we've got counties with two officers in them and counties with eight officers in them. Even if you're a large county with eight officers assigned to it, there's only eight game wardens in the county where the sheriff might have 200 sheriff's deputies.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I lived in Dorchester County right outside of Charleston. In the town of Somerville, got hired. They moved me, I think it's five counties away, up the coast on the North Carolina line. Only time I'd ever been there was in high school for senior weekend. And I go up there, I pull into a store, I'm buying a drink and some chew, and the guy's like, hey, you're that new saltwater game warden. And I'm like, oof, who is this? You know, I had this is like my second day in the county.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, yeah, Ellis. I'm like, this guy knows my name. And he's like, too. Yeah, I used to work at North Charleston Police. And I'm like, what is going on here? I don't even live in this county.
This is before
yet.
Google, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, this is just like,
he did his homework.
I'm sitting here going, it's like, how do these people know who I am? You know, it's not like I was a local PD that got picked up there. You know, I'm like, they transferred me across the state.
Right.
And it's like, and they're like, hey, you know, there's five of us here. They knew you were coming here before you did.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they, you know, they do their homework.
Right.
You know, especially the commercial fishery side, you know. Mm-hmm. If you've ever worked those commercial docks, they know everything there is to know about you.
Yes.
You know? Cool, but spooky at the same time. You know, it's like, it's you know, you I guess you take it one or two ways. Oh, wow, I'm a legend already. Mm-hmm. Or, you know.
Or what am I getting into?
Yeah, am I getting into?
You know? Yep. No, in this day and age, they Google you, you know. And,
oh, yeah.
And, I went to a 4-H dog event, and people started knowing way too much about me. And,
yeah.
And before the end of it, they were like, yeah, we had to, you know, we creeped you, Wayne. We wanted to know who you were and what you were doing and how you did it. And so, because well, I was getting ready, and they were like, oh, you just recently retired. And I'm like, I never told anybody that.
The creepy part is when you're sitting there riding the ticket, and they go, man, I didn't know you went to Somerville High School. I'm like, dude, I don't know you. What? And then what you don't know is they're sitting there looking, you know, for when
right
I played
then.
Baseball, and he's looked.
Right
like, he's like, hey, you were number 16. I'm like, okay, this is day, sir.
And we weren't TV stars like you were.
I know, but that's the world we live in now.
Oh, yeah.
When I started this podcast, that's why I started with the local high school. And I'm like, they can probably teach me a lot. And you know what they did? They teach me to Google it. So the girl I started working with, she'd have her phone right there. If I had any questions about anything, she'd just Google it. And I'm like, that's what I learned from her. Google it, Google it, Google it. And that's how I the podcasting. That's what I'm doing, Googling it. So
that's cool.
No, it's definitely a different world from where we started to where Hunter's taking over. We'll see what 20-something years brings for you, because you're going to be seeing some changes too, I'm sure.
For me, you know, I got a different aspect of it because I got to watch, you know, growing up, seeing all these, you know, everyone
you've got to see the first cell phone he had issued to him, huh? The lunchbox he brought
the
in.
Lunchbox is like, yeah. And you plug it in, sounds like a nuclear thing going off, you know.
Are you putting that by your head, man? Like,
yeah, there's going to be something wrong with that.
But, you know, I grew up watching it, and, you know, I watched these older game wardens, and, you know, I've seen them retire. You see them, you know, progress up into rank, and I hear all these old stories. And coming in new, I'm grateful that I get to hear those stories and got to see these guys in the field, in their prime. But I want to take that and also add some new school to it.
Yeah.
Because I want to keep that heritage. That heritage, like we talked about earlier, is key to being a good game warden, you know. You got to be able to adapt, but keep your roots, you know. Being a fishing game, you know, being out there, checking the fishermen, knowing how to hunt, how to fish, and educate. And I only hope that I can, you know, be as good as a game warden he was and still is.
Well, I was a legend in my own mind.
You were. As long as you think that. That's all that matters. No, he's, you know, I would never change my childhood for anything. I was so proud being there, baseball practice. I'll never forget. We're at baseball practice. He says, hey, the ball coach, your head coach, and totally says, hey, I'll be right back. So he goes, handles an alligator call, and comes back, and I knew what he was doing. Of course, we're like 12, 13, and I said, all right, let's all go by my dad's truck. We'll all be right there before we cut loose. And, of course, he's got it all taped up.
Got an alligator in the back of the truck.
All of us, of course, what do we do? I said, hey, y'all jump on the bed of the truck. We all jump on it. That alligator took the tail, slapped the side of it. We were gone like a bunch of cockroaches. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was more than one occasion where I had a little lizard in the back of the truck, and where, yeah, matter of fact, he was playing in probably Little League 9 or 10 years old, you know, and they came across the PA because there was like four fields that formed a diamond. And like, hey, Mr. Game Warden, your alligator just fell out of your truck. Here I go running across the parking lot, just then slid over the back side of the truck up onto the wheel well and going over. It's like, wow, that's probably not been done here before, you know.
No.
To me, that's completely normal. That's a normal Tuesday. Hey, Dad's got a gator in the back. The other kids is like, whoa, that's awesome. Me, I'm like, eh.
That happens on a regular basis in my house. Oh my goodness! And I don't think it's South Carolina having gators. Actually, I think they start in Florida, go west, but. You guys deal with those on a regular basis,
pretty
huh?
common, pretty yeah. common, you know. I think it was probably a week ago I went and caught a 5-footer, took it out of the little pond over in one of our little neighborhoods. You know, you get people coming from out, I've never seen a gator, it's in my pond or it's in my pool. Okay, I'll come get it for you, and it's another Tuesday. Oh, yeah. Headed over there, let dispatch know what's going on.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we actually have a pretty large gator population. We actually have a public hunting season for alligator, and then we have a private land season. So, I mean, it's, you know, when you protect them long enough, then they become a nuisance.
You know, they start becoming bigger
than you.
You're
busting guys for catching alligators when they're not supposed to because they're protected. Then soon enough, it's like, well, that's a nuisance alligator now. So, well, that was an endangered alligator not long ago.
You're right. So. You're right. And how do you get an alligator out of a swimming pool? Is there a technique?
I would have to say good rope and wear gloves. Rope burn hurts.
I told him. I said,
so you put a noose over him?
So the best thing is you try to get it over the jowls, which is basically jaw and all.
Yeah.
Get it over it. Once you get it out of the pool, get a catch pole, they're going to do the death roll. So you put the catch pole on them, you just let them roll. Eventually, they're going to get tired. So you'd be able to take it. I usually take like an old T-shirt. Throw it over their head where they can't see, jump on top, tape them up and all. I don't know how y'all did it back in the day, but that's how
we wrangled them.
Yeah.
Barehanded, right?
We were old school. We just wrangled them.
Yeah. No rope involved.
No rope involved. Yeah. Barehanded them.
Jumped in the pool with them.
That's why we always wore our gloves so that we'd be able to find that finger if they got a hold to it.
Oh, okay. Well, I got all my.
I learned early on, we used our catch poles, and they're like, do not let go of that catch pole. No matter what is happening, don't let go of that catch pole. He will beat you to death with that catch pole if it comes out of your hand because they start rolling now.
Yeah.
They've got a 6-foot-long aluminum pipe to whack you with as they're rolling, not just a tail. So we always had a long, you know, you pull the cable to tighten it up, and you just let go of the handle and hold the cable and let it spin on that cable until they got tired, you know.
Mm.
But, yeah, it was a very, you know, self-correcting error if you ever let go of that steel pole and didn't hang on.
Not admitting, but I may have let my steel pole go one time.
Yeah, but and I imagine it's hard to hold sometimes.
They get to rolling real fast. You're going, okay, he's going to get tired here soon, and they don't. Yeah. Eventually, you get too tired.
Yeah. I got a small bear on a catch pole one time. I'll tell you what.
Yeah,
I thought it was a small bear until he started going every which way. And I hung on to it, but, man, I was a hurting unit for hanging on to it. Right?
You keep those bears in New Hampshire. That's,
yeah, we'll keep the reptiles.
We got our little black bears down here, and they get, you know, 200 or 300 pounds, but we don't have to deal with them like that.
So, yeah.
You know, I'll take that alligator any day.
Yeah. Well, to teach his own, you know.
We'll play with dinosaurs.
Yeah, when it comes to snakes and reptiles, I think I'd be okay with gators. Snakes and me, just, I don't know if it's a surprise, but I know it's there. And yeah, I've almost stepped on a few myself. I remember I was a park ranger in West Virginia, New River Gorge, and we're walking along the cliffs, and the guy in front of me says, "Hey, don't step on the snake, Wayne." Yeah, that's the first time I saw a snake in West Virginia, and I was like, it's a big old black snake coiled right up there, and I'm like, yikes. So, surprised I didn't jump off into the cliff. So,
I am not a fan of Mr. No Shoulders at all.
No.
Yeah.
I think I inherited that from you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's good that you guys have that.
If you're a game warden, you must have really get into snakes.
Oh.
No, man, we don't like those snakes.
Yeah. Gator, I don't know what it is. Like you said, no shoulders. Just, you know, I'd be fine with gators, lizards. I'm okay with. It's just something about snakes. Oh, yeah. So, no, I really appreciate you guys taking the time because, you've had a long day, Lee. You're currently the president of International Wildlife Crime Stoppers.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the only president that's had to, thanks to COVID, serve a 24-month tour of duty.
Yes.
Can we get a round of applause for you?
Yes, awesome. I appreciate it.
But I'll say this, you know, when I got roped into becoming in the chain of command on that as a second vice president, Wayne was president.
Oh.
And they got me while I was eating breakfast and was a newbie to these conferences and said, hey, wouldn't you like to be the second vice president? No one really told me in, you know, 3 years you have to host the conference.
And we do that when they become vice president, we tell them.
It's kind of one of those sink or swim type things.
Yes, definitely sink or swim. And he hosted the most amazing, you know, conference in North Conway, New Hampshire. And we went up, is it the Green Mountains or White Mountains?
White Mountains.
Yeah. We went up to the Mount Washington Observatory.
Green will be next year.
Yeah, that's right, Vermont.
Just keep rubbing it in. I didn't get to go.
We had the greatest time, and I was like, wow, you know. And then,
sisters were there.
Yeah.
I got lots of pictures. I was like, oh, by the way, look at everyone we're hanging out with, Wayne, you know, all this. I'm going,
I'm like, hey, this guy's for TV. He's cool.
I'm like, uh-huh.
You know, it set the bar.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were getting geared up for 2020 here. COVID decided it would take a little hangout, and then postponed it, and they said, well, you know, we've never had to deal with this before, so why don't you just continue for another year? And I think I might have had a concussion, and I said yes.
Yeah.
And so here we are, you know, 2021. Mm-hmm. We're halfway through the conference. You know, like I said,
By the hour.
You set the bar, so I've done everything in my power to make this a great conference.
It's been an awesome conference.
You know, I think we went and toured Clemson University's football athletic facility today.
And I didn't think I was going to like that, and I loved it.
You loved it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I loved it.
At the end, you're kind of fangirling a little bit. Going, yeah,
I was.
Take a picture over here.
I was. Yeah. I didn't say that, and we're going to have to do a podcast about that because it was, it was dynamic. It was a lot of leadership, a lot of things that I like that they instill in their football players, and I hope they instill in their students because that makes them successful, and that makes us I see that stuff slipping in our country, and I hope they hold that bar at Clemson because it was very impressive of everything they do.
It's definitely – I'll say it was a culture I had no clue – about the culture that was over there. And I am a diehard Gamecocks fan, a University of South Carolina Gamecocks. And
big state rivalry. Big state rivalry.
After going today and listening to Tracy Sweeney, Dabo's brother, who did a great job with us today, taking us through all the facilities. And again, go back to what you were saying, a lot of leadership talk, teaching us about the culture of the football program, the behind the scenes.
Stuff we can take away.
They're going to disown me in Gamecock Nation, but I'm a fan now. I'm a fan of the
philosophy,
culture, the philosophy, the loving and the care they're showing these kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, I left there going, wow, this is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And and taking what they were saying and taking it back home and working with your guys and your gals and taking that philosophy back to work with you.
Yeah.
You know, that's great.
Yeah. No, I thought it was very dynamic, very successful. And I certainly hope I get an opportunity to talk to Tracy on a podcast, because I'd like to bring that to the listeners. When I have my son listen to podcasts, I'd like to listen to inspirational things, things that are going to teach leadership and, you know, those types of things. I think of Jocko. I like to listen to Jocko. And he has that leadership role. He wants you to be a leader too. So he's training you to be a leader in his
podcast. Every time I listen to him, I'm like, all right, I need to do something better. And, you know, what can I improve on?
Yeah. Like, and if you can come away from a podcast like that, he's doing a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. When I teach school now, I try to do that inspirational stuff, you know, trying to get that next generation of game warden and, you know, instill the same values that we have talked about today. Well, so I'm going to take some of that Clemson stuff with me.
I'm going to tell you, you're doing an amazing job. I remember when we talked about this in, I think, Ohio, we were talking about it. And you're like, I'm going to retire and I'm going to do a podcast. And I didn't know diddly about podcasts. I'm like, what is Wayne talking about?
Got to do a little educating.
Now I'm listening to you while I'm riding to work. I got about an hour ride into the office, and I'm, you know, it's like, well, let me pop on, you know, see what this guy's talking about. And you've had some great guests and great stories, but it's amazing what you've moved into with this.
Yeah,
I know. And we need it. We need that. We are our world's worst enemy of not promoting what we do and who we are.
I agree.
And thank goodness for, you know, Maine Warden Service when they started with Northwoods Law, Florida Fish and Wildlife when they had their show in the beginning back in
way back.
Animal Planet, way back. Mm-hmm. You know, the Warden's shows that they've had out west. You know, all of this, Texas Lone Star Law, New Hampshire, you know, with Northwoods, you know, all that's done is really bring us into the spotlight.
Yes, and I totally
thank
agree.
Goodness, because we are our world's worst enemy of not promoting who we are and what we do.
Right. Well,
I think it goes back to, you know, storytelling. You know, I listen to your podcast all the time, and as a new game warden, there's nothing better than, it's kind of like sitting around a campfire at a hunting cabin or a hunt lodge and just listening. You know, you just sit back, listen to all the stories, and you'd learn so much. And in this day and age of being able to do these podcasts, I think it's a great way for, you know, future game wardens and game wardens who are just now getting into it to use it as a great platform to build off of, to improve themselves. You know, like you said, we are our worst enemy.
Yeah.
And in the field, everyone I run into, oh man, I watch, you know, Northwoods Law, Lone Star Law, I love that show. And it gets that ball rolling. You can get to talk to them. You know, it's a good interaction. Maybe, you know, you're writing a warning or a ticket, but in the end, they get to learn. I've had more people say, thank you, I learned so much. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a citation, and I'm walking away going, man, I wrote you a citation.
And he just thanked you for it.
But he thanked me for it, and I'm walking away going, what?
Mm-hmm. but that's a successful interaction.
That's
a successful contact. When someone gets that education, even if they ended up with a citation or a warning or a verbal, if they thank you afterward, then you did it right. Not just because of what you're doing in the job, but you treated them right. You know, and our colonel is Colonel Frampton is, that's one of his things is, hey, treat them like you would want your mom treated, your sister treated, your brother, your grandfather treated. And I think that is one thing that's different than traditional law enforcement is we deal with people in that recreational setting, so we treat them a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even with all the unrest we've dealt with recently, when you see the wardens being called in to deal with, you know, help on that front line, the way we interact with people that are armed, because, you know, yes, it's a firearm, but it's a tool at a sport. So, you know, we don't always have that guarded, bladed feel because we're in that recreational setting. It does give us the ability to kind of communicate differently. Even though we got the badge on, we do communicate a little differently. So,
right.
There's been many instances, you know, I go to back up a, you know, local PD or something, and just me being there, you know, oh man, that's the game warden. And just talk to him. Hey man, hi, you know, I'm backing up this other officer, but I may be able to de-escalate, you know, hey man, I see you got a sticker for turkey. Where you go turkey hunting or something like that. They see us in recreation. And you could take a situation that, you know, may be hostile, and just because of who we are and how we interact every day with someone, you know, we're still on edge because we're still law enforcement. You know, it's you still got to have that extra edge, but you can de-escalate it to a point.
You reset their mind when you start talking about something they love.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're not thinking about the problem they have right there. They're thinking, yeah, turkey hunt? You want to talk about turkey hunt? I just, you know.
And that's the whole thing. You know, I love the local PDs, and they come and back us up all the time. And I've had some you know, that'll come back me up and that I'm good friends with go, hey, man, how do you approach these types of things? I know how the academy taught us, but how have you adapted? Right. You know, we can show them a few things, verbal judo, different stuff like that, that we use as a good avenue to kind of, okay, it may be a bad situation, but you can turn it into a good
start one. To relate to people. Yep. And you're absolutely, you take that turkey sticker, you see that, and you start talking turkey hunting, and then they start relating to you as a person, yep. Not necessarily. But I feel so bad for those guys in law enforcement because every call usually is mm-hmm. negative, and that's got to weigh on you.
It can drain on you. You know, I talk to a lot of guys because they want to come over. You know, you have these local guys that, you know, maybe they, for us, when I was hired, you had to have a four-year degree or mm-hmm. you know, some law enforcement, some college, and we've changed some of our requirements and all. And some of those guys, you know, they got married, had kids, and are in law enforcement. They want to become a game warden. And they get into law enforcement, and that constant negativity, it brings them down and down and down. And, like, man, how do you stay happy every day? I wake up every day. Go, do I want to go on my boat? Do I want to go, you know, check deer hunters? I wake up with a smile because I love my job. Yeah. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I know y'all feel the same exact way. It's, where else can you go? I'm going to go get on a boat today and go check some fishermen.
That's right.
And be able to have an awesome interaction with someone. Maybe meet a kid who got his first, you know, in the slot limit striper. You know, he's never caught one before and get to be able to take a photo with him. Yeah. That means a lot to me. And growing up, you, me, I always think back to that very first deer and you teaching me tradition and everything like that. And sometimes I get to see that with a father and son or a father and a daughter in the field. And that just... that makes my day so much better. I could have the worst week ever. I see that. That tells me everything I'm doing now is
absolutely.
I'm right where I need to be.
And it's the funny thing you say about this podcast. I've had three individuals reach out to me that have been hired as game wardens across the country. And they said, Wayne, you inspired us to do this. And you encouraged us through your podcast. We learned so much. And for me, there's nothing better than encouraging that next generation.
Yes.
So, and so much what I did with my children's book too is trying to build that next generation, even at a lower, you know, at that age six, trying to instill that, hey, I want to be that cowboy in the woods just like Wayne did. And you guys are on it. And I really enjoy hanging out with both of you. It's a pleasure to meet you this time, Hunter.
I know. I'm glad I was finally able to meet up with you. I listen to you so much. I'm finally like, all right, I finally get to meet him. And he asked to be on the podcast. I was like,
you had a little slip of a crush on your Wayne.
Yeah, that's good. That's
don't tell
good.
Him. Don't tell him.
I need a lot more of those crushes out there. Like.
He's heard all the stories. It's like, hey, you always go with Wayne and his family and his kids and my kids. And we always ended up eating somewhere.
Yeah.
As we set up to go together, or we just ended up in the same place. So we had definitely had similar tastes. So.
Yeah, and now we Andrew requests that he goes with, you know, he either wants to go with Chris Simmons in Maine, or can we go with Lee? And where's Lee's family? Where are the girls? And it's just interesting, you know, that my son, that's what he comes to these things for now. He sees your family, and he wants to hang out because he enjoys hanging out. He enjoys hearing the stories as well. Maybe he'll be a game warden someday. He's not down that road. Maybe he'll go to physical therapy, history. Who knows? But
he's going to remember it for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, speaking from a son of a game warden, he's going to be very proud of you if he not already is. And there's no more I could say other than being proud.
Yeah.
This guy right here beside me, I may look a little younger, a little better, but in the end, he's taught me everything I know to be as a man and a game warden. And I just hope I'm as good as him.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other game wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigations, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders,